at the Rising Billions. Disrupting tradition.
Always be closing.
Gaining exponential wisdom from street smart strategies.
I dream the kind of dreams that other people said would not be possible.
Free your mind. Nothing happens till something moves.
I'm a big fan of going all in on your strengths.
Create your blue ocean. Innovation and collaboration with competition.
Do you want to sell sugar water for the rest of your life? Or do you want to come with me and change the world?
Creating uncontested market space.
I worry that people don't tap into their strengths.
Wealth creation and a new economy entrepreneur.
There is a very thin dividing line between success and failure.
Witnessing unprecedented technology.
You can fail at what you don't want. So you might as well take a chance on doing what you love.
Welcome to the Think Bold, Be Bold Show with Christopher Gumby and Alan Rich.
Hi, it's Christopher Cumby with Think Bold, Be Bold, here with my awesome co-host, my only co-host, Alan's in the house.
I'm in the house. It's in a nice warm house today, too, on a really cold day with the snow all over the ground outside. But hey, having a fantastic morning. Chris, how about yourself?
Having a great morning. It's actually pretty warm down at the beach in Florida here, so I'm enjoying it. But hey, listen, you told me that Portland was one of these places where, throughout the winter, it's quite mild. And you actually said you should come and move here.
Well, I think you should come and move here.
I am not doing that, my friend.
Bring a sled and a pair of dogs.
Right? That's exactly what I'll have to do to get there.
Yeah, very unusual weather conditions hitting the Northwest this year. But I have a feeling we're just starting to see some of the changes going on in our ecological ecosystem here, not just on the West Coast, but globally. So it'll be interesting to see how things pan out the next 4 or 5 years, what kind of changes happen in the weather patterns. But anyway, we're feeling some changes that we haven't had for 40 years, but maybe that's just cyclical in nature. I don't know.
Awesome. And, we have a great guest today. I'm excited. This is one we've been waiting for a little bit here, and certainly just, an inspiring person, has so much, smarts and just an incredible opportunity, just to be able to have some time with her today. And I know, Alan, you always introduce the guests. So why don't we just get into it? Because I've got, a few questions, obviously, and I know you do. And let's bring her on in.
Well, I think that's probably the exact thing we should do. We don't have too many prodigies on our show. Actually, I think she might be the second prodigy we've had on our show. And, I didn't even know what that term was until I was older. because I was never considered a prodigy, maybe a prodigy of what not to do. But,
don't Jessica, do this.
No, don't do that. Jessica started when she was when she was 8 years old, she was already learning how to code. And she had a mother that was an entrepreneur and learning that from her family. And that's just, a lot of kudos to, my parents gave me the best they had. And unfortunately, it didn't have a lot to do with academia. It just wasn't the generation that I grew up in. But Jessica was different. She was able to really, she had a dad who was an engineer and mom that was an entrepreneur. And so I think she really learned and she really gravitated towards that. But I think she had some real natural talents. And she was, she had a web hosting company at the age of 12. She she dropped out of high school and launched a company called Indinero at 19. By 2010, she had $1.2 million in funding. She's been called by Tech Press as the closest we've got to a female Mark Zuckerberg.
Wow.
And, Inc. Categorized her as 30 under 30. So she got a company called Indinero Tax Services for Entrepreneurs. And we're just very privileged to have her on the show. But without further ado, Jessica Ma, welcome to Think Bold, Be Bold.
Thanks so much for having me. Really, really happy to be here with you guys.
Yeah, and happy New Year, Jessica. I hope you had a great holiday season there, and you know, now we're back at it, and I'm sure you've got a busy schedule ahead for this year. And you know, I just you know, based on what Alan just said, and as young as you still are, and as young as you were, you know, becoming an entrepreneur and going after these things, where did that all come from, Jessica? Like, why Indonero? What led you down this path? And maybe give us a little background on, you know, where this all stemmed from, and how you know, maybe grew up a little bit, as far back as you want, or as recent as you want. As of course, I'm just curious to see, you know, underneath the hood there a little bit on you know, who Jessica Ma is from a personal standpoint.
Sure. Well, when I grew up, I always knew I wanted to start my own business at some point. And I didn't really know what I wanted to do in the business world. But over several years, like going through high school and college, I just talked to so many other entrepreneurs and business owners, and I realized how many problems they had in running their businesses. And that's kind of what inspired the idea for Indonero, because business owners hate accounting and taxes. They hate doing it. They hate thinking about it. It stresses them out. Well, maybe you could build something that would actually fix that problem. And I always knew I was kind of different, and I was a little quirky, and I had a lot of trouble sitting still in school. So when I was 14, I actually wasn't doing that great. I was just really bored. I thought school was pointless and a waste of time, and I was making more money than my teachers were through my business, and it's kind of hard to sit still and listen to them when you're thinking about it that way.
That would be called really daydreaming in my era.
Yeah, it's not good when you're stepping outside of your science class or English class to take a customer support or sales calls in the middle of the day.
That's awesome.
That is kind of awesome, actually. I love it.
And then bringing your lunch to the library so you could check your work email instead of hanging out and socializing with your peer group. So I didn't have many friends for that reason.
Well, they all want to be your friend now, I'm sure. That being said, you know what, you know, you said you weren't sure what you were going to do, but you knew you were going to do something. What got you, you know, here today in Indonero and starting that? You know, what led to that? Was there a specific aha moment? Was it, you know, walk us through that sequence.
Yeah, well, I started thinking about that idea for Indonero probably when I was 14 or 15, because in running my other small businesses, and they weren't huge businesses. They were like low six-figure businesses. I remember I really struggled to get a grasp on my own finances, and we had some cash flow gaps with that company, which ended up leading me to deciding to sell it to one of my customers. And that made me think about how there's definitely an opportunity here, because just having accounting software doesn't fix your cash management and other finance problems.
Right.
So I've been thinking about the idea for a long time. And then I went to college early, finished undergrad at UC Berkeley when I was still 19. And then I decided that instead of wanting to get a normal job like everyone else, and my parents were actually proponents of that, they said, why not just take a normal job, be a little normal, take a few years, travel, work at a Google or a Facebook or something. And that just did not at all sound appealing to me. And mm-hmm. I also knew that I'd get comfortable with the lifestyle of being a corporate employee if I did that. And it'd be so much harder for me to quit and to start a company. So that's, and I'm also super impatient. Like, I couldn't sit still in school. I like had to get a few grades and all that, because I'm just I just don't want to wait, and so that's why I decided to start my company right there and then. And we went through an incubator accelerator called Y Combinator, and I started with hiring some of my closest friends from college, which ended up being a disaster.
Never hire friends,
the hard way. especially your closest friends. I mean, you know, we're still acquaintances, but it's hard to say that we're still friends with a straight face. So that didn't work out so well. But I've been powering through on the business now for the past 6 years, and we've grown quite a bit. We have like 200 employees, double-digit revenues, and a nine-figure valuation as of a month and a half ago. And it's been pretty exciting, but actually still really stressful. Like before this call, we were talking about founder burnout, and I felt like I was definitely starting to feel a bit of founder burnout towards the end of 2016. And it's a little fresh right now. It's only mid-January 2017. So I'm still kind of reeling in from that a bit and reflecting on how to really run this marathon well, because 6 years running a company, that's a long time. And I've been thinking about why people give up. Over the weekend, I was reading Man's Search for Meaning, which I'm not sure if you guys read that, but it's a really heavy book covering this guy who's a psychologist who spent a few years in Auschwitz in the concentration camps, and just finding meaning and why do people power through and stick it through versus give up, and those who gave up would die. I kind of compared that to the entrepreneur's plight, I don't know, maybe it definitely put me in a really reflective place. So anyway, that's the mindset I'm in as I talk to you guys right now. I'm chipper and happy, but also reflective on that.
Well, I think that's a, pardon me, I think that's a real kefir. Did I just say kefir? Kefir? I haven't had my key for you today. I think that's a really key for entrepreneurs to do, is to do some self-reflection, but also to understand the need for pivoting. And Chris and I talk about this a lot in business, and a lot of entrepreneurs, when they're starting a business, they're the magic. And what I mean by that is that the ideas in their head, the focus is in their head, and you support yourself and you surround yourself with people that can support and grow and develop and nurture your ideas and your visions. But a lot of them are solo. And there comes times in everybody's business when you have to pivot, either pivot for an opportunity or pivot to avoid catastrophe. And sometimes the only person that's able to witness and see that is the entrepreneur themselves. And sometimes it hits them right smack in the face. But Jessica, you've been able to pivot, and you had to pivot with your company, realizing that some of the software wasn't necessarily providing what was needed, and cash flows were dwindling, you talked about taking your Ferrari head into a brick wall, and that's time for a pivot. That's time for a right turn or a left turn. Walk us through that whole process. Is the aha moment, and then how you made the decision to go whichever way you went.
Sure. I'll comment on the pivot story, and that was only the first of many more pivots to come. And the New York Times, Inc. magazine, they talked about the big pivot I had when we ran out of money, and we had no choice but to pivot. And in that case, I think it's really actually easy to pivot, because you're staring death straight in the eye, and the alarm bells are ringing at full blast, so you know you have to change. There's no choice. And there's no money, and the investors aren't thinking too highly of me. They didn't say it to my face, but I know they were getting a little concerned there. And I remember talking to one investor maybe a year after the pivot, and I said like, why did you invest? Like, you knew that my first idea was garbage and wasn't going to work out, and yet you still gave me a lot of money. And you said, well, I thought you'd realize it eventually and then figure it out, but you had to learn it the hard way. And I was a little upset, but I thanked him for that, and he and I are so close. But we weren't solving a real problem is the key thing. We weren't growing our revenues. We raised over $1 million. We burned through maybe $700,000, and maybe 800 grand actually, and we had mid five-figure revenues to speak of, which is embarrassing. It's really, really embarrassing, and there's no way we'd raise money on an up valuation, and that's painful. So I went around and I visited customers. I went to their actual offices, and one customer said, Jessica, like, you're not charging me enough money, first of all, and second of all, if you just did my accounting for me and my taxes for me, like, you actually filed it all, then I would pay you, like, thousands of dollars a year instead of $100 a year, like I'm paying you today. And that was the aha moment. And I don't think I would have gotten that insight if I had just called him on the phone or if I had sent him an email survey. I had to physically be in his office and to watch him go through this whole story in his head on, like, why uses in an arrow and what he would pay more money for. And I think I did ask him point blank, what would it take for you to pay us more money? And I'll always remember that customer. He ended up signing up two or three companies onto Indonero down the line and spending tens of thousands of dollars with us over the course of the past few years. So that was quite the turnaround.
Well, that's funny. I want to hang on that a second. You were already doing more than he had expected. You were already doing the more than what was required for the financial, you know, gain that you were getting. And I think that's a huge note that you wouldn't have known that had you not been face to face and gotten to know your customer and risked that, because I don't think anybody else in the company would have done that. But that was a pivot point that you had to look in the mirror and say, I've got to get up, feet on the ground, and talk to a few people and find out if it's bad, then it's bad. If it's great, it's going to be great. But I've got to know, because until I do, I don't know which way to turn. So kudos for you doing that, whether it was forced or whether it was by choice. You made a great move and some fantastic results came from that. And I'm assuming after that, you restructured your fee plan.
I absolutely did, and it worked out okay to start. The issue was, even after we restructured the fee plan, we realized that we were still losing money on a bunch of customers, and our customers paying us the least amount of money would cost us the most in terms of customer support needs, and that wasn't sustainable either, so I had to pivot that again. And then as we grew, we had our biggest customers would leave us because they would outgrow the solution. So I had to pivot again and offer a solution for our bigger customers. And, you know, I'm still pivoting every day here. I'm pivoting right now because I have some customers who would complain about how they want to have the ability to stay with their original CPA instead of moving entirely on Indonero and giving up that relationship. So now we're building a solution to partner with accountants instead of competing with those accountants. So I think this notion of one-time pivot and then your business is saved, hooray, and then you make, like, these magazine covers and, you know, you get 30 under 30 awards and all this great stuff, that's just not really realistic. I think the company is always pivoting, and it's less sexy to talk about, but it's almost more important to talk about the later stage pivots.
Oh, I totally agree. And I just want to say, Chris, I know you're dying to jump in here, but I just want to say kudos to you for following your client. Kudos to you for knowing your client and to understand their needs and to follow with a service, not just because you know that you might lose them, but because it's the right thing to do. And you provided a service and you had clients, and you really tracked what they needed as they grew. You helped them grow. And as they grow, new things come about on their plate, and you provided a new tool. Is it frustrating? Yeah. Is there entanglements to growth and to pivoting? Yes. But in the long run, you're constantly serving your client. And that's a very honorable track to take. And I just want to say kudos to you for seeing that and for doing that, and for continually putting yourself in a position of flux to where you are going to serve your client, what the best you can with whatever comes up in your genre. So just, you know, as you're going here, and I know it's the frustration, understand that you're doing the right thing, Jessica.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I absolutely believe that. And I highly encourage everyone to go out and visit their customers in person, ideally.
It is key. It is key. Hey, Chris, what you got next for Jessica?
I agree, you know, from a perspective of, you know, asking your clients, visiting your clients, and, you know, the fact that you had a, you know, major epiphany come about is definitely the reason why you would want to, because they're going to give you the full disclosure on, you know, what it is that you can, you know, perhaps help further on. And that's what you do with your company, is you help people solve problems. And I think that that is, you know, where a lot of people, when they're looking at their business and our audience listening in, you know, as an entrepreneur or, you know, C-level executives looking at your business and, you know, maybe asking that question, do we know enough or are we connecting enough with the client or end users if it is a service? And do we, you know, take enough stock in the fact that if we're providing a product, do we know how our clients or customers feel about that? Jessica, you know, walk us through maybe in the last little while, you know, maybe three lessons that you, you know, learned, or, you know, let's just pick one. What major lesson in the last year have you learned by, where things were, let's say at the beginning of 2016 to the end of 2016, what was a major lesson learned through your adventure in either personally or within the company? Like to always dive in and ask different questions, you know, certainly through this show, but that's one that I'd be interested in, knowing that you've had some, you know, tremendous success, but, you know, obviously with that came some challenges. But what's something that you, you know, a major lesson that you learned through all of this?
Yeah, sure. I'd say, so 2016 was a pretty difficult year professionally for me. We came off a super high of 2015 where we raised a lot of great money. Business was growing like a weed. We just had our Inc. magazine cover story come out, and things were just amazing. And we came into 2016 thinking, oh my God, like, we're going to be like taking off like crazy again, and it ended up being a really tough year for us. We made a lot of execution missteps, and we had trouble adapting to the marketplace as quickly as we had in prior years. And I think a lot of that was due to the fact that I didn't really have a good system in place for seeing what my team members in the company saw. So a lot of them would talk to our clients directly and say, hey, we should do this, we should do that. And their managers wouldn't necessarily take that feedback into account and do anything about it. Or actually, more importantly, in early 2016, we didn't have managers for a lot of teams. So most, I'd say like two-thirds of our workforce was essentially self-managed. And I don't believe in self-management because it leads to a lot of chaos and uncertainty and lack of process and lack of accountability, which is what we experienced firsthand. So I don't really advise it. And what that led me to doing today is having what we call a monthly pulse survey, in that we have people send in their raw feedback on the biggest challenges that they are facing in the company, and where they think the company can improve. And so I get 200 of these responses now every single month, and I read through the comments and I reply to many of them, and it's helped us unlike anything else I've done in the past year, because we can move so much faster, and because team members don't need to go through any hierarchy or bureaucracy. I mean, I hate to say the word bureaucracy and hierarchy because we only have 200 employees, but that's what starts to happen. especially if I have like a VP who has a director, who has a manager, who has a team lead. Like, it's a few layers deep, and I want to hear feedback directly from the troops, just like how I want to hear feedback directly from my customers. I forgot to do the same with my employees in 2016, and it really bit me really badly. And so now I encourage all my CEO friends to do a similar monthly survey. You can't do it annually. Annually is just not often enough, and quarterly is pretty bad as well. The key is monthly. The key is replying to the feedback directly to employees, and the key is at the all hands to talk about all the things you're doing differently because of the feedback that came from the pulse survey. We just had our all hands last night, and I got feedback that it was the best all hands we'd ever had because I'd mentioned the term pulse survey no less than a dozen times in the entire 45-minute long all hands meeting, and I talked about a bunch of things that we're doing differently with team structure, with compensation, with stock plan, with culture, with our product, you name it, based on what I heard from these poll surveys. So if I had to boil it down to a single thing, I think this would be it.
Beautiful. And, you know, I'm just going to make a quick comment on that, you know, from the front lines and getting really, you know, down deep within your organization, reminds me of something that, you know, I learned as well when I had several hundred reps. And one of the things I realized is that expectations versus co-creation are so different. And when you allow them to express ideas or take ownership or provide feedback, you're more in the co-creation standpoint versus expectations, because I often find that expectations get broken down and are often not aligned. But when you're co-creating, it's an opportunity to, you know, really make an agreement with everyone. And I find that when people make an agreement versus that is based on co-creation versus expectation, it makes such a difference in the organization because they feel like they're, you know, part of things, and they feel like when they see something change, for instance, you know, let's take, you know, circumstances where you did one monthly, or 1 month, you got some feedback, and then ultimately, you may not be able to change absolutely everything, that quickly, but at least people, who made suggestions see some of that change, and then everybody starts to see that in the organization that you're listening. And I think that that is part of co-creation, and that a lot of companies, to your point, that you recommend now to do these things, is I think a lot of them are missing that, you know, especially leadership is, you know, more leaning on the expectations of the agreement versus the co-creation of the agreement, where everybody then, you know, plays a, you know, integral part in the growth. So just something I, you know, came to mind when you were talking, and I just wanted to bring that point. Alan, what do you say, my friend?
I just want to tag onto that. And once again, you know, Jessica, kudos, because you're engaging your
right
employees, and they're relevant. They're relevant not only in the marketplace, but they're relevant in your eyes, which is where, for the most part, where people want, they want to know they contribute. And like Chris said, they want to be part of that. And when you've got synchronicity in creating that, then you've got really some great fuel to be able to grow when other opportunities come your way. And I think that that's great. And a lot of people don't do that. It sounds like it should be a real common exercise. But a lot of entrepreneurs don't. They don't listen to their staff. They don't listen to their partners, their collaborators, people that also serve the other, you know, their client demographic. And they don't follow, they don't trust. And that might be a big case, is they don't trust it. But you've gone past that. You do not only trust, you enlist their help and their guidance, even if it's through evaluation. And they become part of the, not only the destination, but part of the journey. And that is a very big strengthening piece of the company. So kudos. But I want to take you in a little bit different direction here. You know, Chris and I talk a lot about, you know, on and off on and off the microphone here about really understanding your target demographic and what that really looks like. And I think a lot of entrepreneurs, when they start, they try to market to everybody and end up marketing to nobody because they don't hone in on the requirements and the skills and the challenges of a particular demographic and serve that well. Unlike what you do, you in fact follow that. So I guess I want to give you an open mic and kind of a really open opportunity here to define for us and for the listening audience, who is your target market? What's their DNA? Paint that picture for us.
Yeah, happy to talk about that. Also because I've had some problems with this, and this is an area where I've had to pivot. And I'd like to say that our early target customer, which were basically other tech startups like ourselves. So ideally, they had raised some money. They had 2 to 10 employees. They were based in the Bay Area or in New York. Their age was between 25 and 45. It was pretty specific, and we got a bunch of those people to sign on, and we did a killer job marketing to them because, you know, hyper-specific, and they all know each other. The problem, though, is that these businesses, a lot of them, go out of business. So we were good at targeting them, but we weren't really good at retaining this high-risk customer base because they're out of business. So we pivoted our target customer base soon after that to go for more of the professional service firms. So we did have that in-between period where we thought, all right, let's open the gates to anyone and see what sticks. And we really struggled there because we had, like, restaurants, we had, like, warehouses, and we had, like, factories, and we had research firms and PR firms, and it was just chaotic because we didn't know how to sell properly to each vertical, and our product team didn't know how to build the best product for any one group because each of these different types of businesses would need way too many varying things. So, for example, if I sold to, like, a toy manufacturing company, they need to have lots of good inventory data, and they have to really manage their cash flow super tightly, whereas the PR firms and the law firms who we have on board in and out, and that's more of our sweet spot customer today, they care more about their margins, costing per project, and other things that, you know, the toy companies wouldn't care about. And so that was something we did struggle with for a good year probably. So I think it's great that you bring that up to your listeners. I've had to learn that one the hard way, unfortunately.
Right. Well, you know, I think learning it the hard way though really sinks in, you really understand. So don't knock yourself around for that. Plus in doing that though, you were able to not only, you know, I mean, let's say what it is. If you don't have a black P&L, you don't really have a growing company. The whole idea for a company is to be able to grow the company to where the company makes money, the employees make money, and the investors make money. And you can grow and adapt for your customer base and make that large. You got to make money in order to make it work. And so you've got to find that demographic that you can serve the best. And you did that. You know, once again, kudos for doing that, because a lot of people still try to serve everyone. They end up serving no one, and they end up failing, not pivoting. And once again, you're the pivot master. So again, I take my hat off to you. Well done.
Thanks. Yeah, I think the real lesson there is, as entrepreneurs, we could read all the books we want. We could attend all the classes, listen to all the podcasts in the world, and we're still going to make mistakes, or businesses are still going to struggle, and we're just going to have to pivot accordingly and be okay with the idea that we're probably going to have to do micro pivots in the dozens of times before we figure out the optimal solution. And that is totally okay. That is accepted, and everyone else is doing that. I think that's the real key here.
Yeah, sure. You've embraced that. And, you know, with the changing economy, and economy is always changing, so that's nothing new, even though everybody likes to use the term new changing economy and the new economy. I think that's really overused now. But there is a lot of flux, and things are with the technologies and such, there changes happening on, you know, at really fast levels. And it's creating opportunities and environments that weren't present 6 months prior. So being able to, you know, to pivot and shift based on, you know, what's being developed, not just problems and solutions, but new things that are being developed and how do you address that, I think is going to be a big characteristic for any kind of a startup or any kind of anybody that calls themselves an entrepreneur really has to be able to understand what's happening in their market and research beyond just their industry. So I guess I want to, and Chris, I'm going to take your thunder away or take another spot here. But Jessica, what kind of research do you do outside of your ideal market to kind of trend map or industry map where things are heading in the economy to know where to put your focus?
Well, let me talk about some things we're doing it in the narrow to figure out where we want to be, not just in the short term, because it's easy to look short term, but to look 3 to 5 years out. And for us, we compete with accountants and accounting firms, and they have a pretty good outlook for where the industry is going long term because they think about it all the time. And so I've gone to these accounting conferences. I've talked to in the many dozens of professionals running their own firms in our industry, and we talk about it several times a year together. And at least for our business, we're finding that companies like Indonero are going to eventually displace bookkeepers and the lower-end accountants, and that's going to have a lot of downstream effects for the rest of the accounting industry. So the solution to that, we believe we have a good thesis for, and we're working on that. But I think the real point here is that other people have the thoughts and ideas and have thought way more about the future of our industry than we have, and I think we could get creative about it, but it's easier for me to just go and network around and to take time to get out of my office and to take a lunch with someone else running a competing firm and to get advice from them and to really shoot it with them, and so I spend at least a good chunk of time doing that now, even though it might not be directly relevant to my today or my next quarter's business.
Smart.
Yeah.
Very smart. Very simple. Very smart. Keeping your finger on the pulse of what's going on.
You have to. I mean, once you have like a big team, right? And you guys know this, you've done it before. You should trust them to run the day to day. And, you know, as a CEO, a lot of your work is thinking, how do we position the company for success 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, or 10, or 20 years out from now? And so we're really allowed to put ourselves ahead of things a bit. And if we can't do that, we're not doing a very good job being CEO.
Absolutely. And speaking of CEO, I've got a question for you, Jessica. You know, not too often are CEOs both of these traits, and the traits I'm, you know, referring to is both strategic and tactical. Where do you feel you fit out of, you know, three options, being a strategic CEO, a tactical CEO, or both?
I definitely put myself in the both camp, but I think it really would be more fair to say that some weeks I'm hyper-tactical and some weeks I'm hyper-strategic, and it's incredibly difficult for me to be both within the same week.
Gotcha.
And yeah, I don't know how you guys feel about that, but the context switching is, it's really challenging. So I got to say, all right, this week I'm just going to think about the industry. I'm just going to think about products we're going to build 2, 3, 4, 5 years out. I'm just going to think about long-term financing needs. And then the next week, all right, let's get into the weeds. Let's talk to the employees. Let's talk to the customers. Go through the metrics and look at our numbers and figure out what's going on. And it's just, I think, important to bucket your time in a more focused way.
I love it. Great answer. And thank you for that. Horizon, you know, what does it look like for you going into, especially, you know, a new year and, you know, looking forward, and obviously you gave us some insight that, you know, you often think about, okay, you know, 3, 5, 10 years out, what does it look like for you? And not necessarily to do with just business either. What's on your horizon, maybe personally as well, if you want to answer that?
Well, I'll start with the business stuff. I'd say that over 2017, we're going to start executing on some of those projects that won't really benefit the company until 3, 4, 5 years out. And I think that's going to be really fun. And I think it's really important, even if it doesn't get short-term results. But I think personally, I'm excited to, I know In an Arrow won't be my only rodeo, and I think pretty much everyone in my company knows that by this point. It's kind of like this, it's like a secret that everyone knows, but no one wants to talk about or admit, and, sure. And I think I'm trying to be more open to admitting that In an Arrow is not going to be the only thing for me.
Right.
And so I'm working on a few other projects right now, actually. I've got a few other companies I'm looking to get off the ground and hire CEOs for, and put that into my personal holding company. So that's a big thing I'm working on. And then I've got some other charitable work I'm working on. So one of them being that I noticed that a lot of my other CEO peers, they've been incredibly successful with their businesses, and they don't know what they're going to do with their newfound wealth. They already bought their airplane, or they upgraded their house, and it's like, now what? And over dinners, I asked them, like, look, you've got a few $100 million now, or in one case, you've got $1 billion now, and, how are you going to really improve the world? And most of my friends are like dumbfounded when I ask them that question. They really don't know what they're going to do. And so I'm starting to put together a group of all my friends who had been really successful and get them to really commit to, giving their wealth away, similar to what Gates and Buffett have done with their billionaire pledge, only that we're working with people who aren't necessarily billionaires yet. And we're going to help them put in more time and bandwidth into thinking through how they're going to improve the world, either through their business. They could, do a nonprofit arm through their business. They could give their money away. They could, actually actively help out. And so that's a big thing I'm working on right now that I'm really excited to share.
I love that. I love the philanthropy view and the fact that, again, you're a creative person, and this is not, where it's just going to stop, and obviously you're going to see things through. And I love the fact that it's something that everybody knows, but no one really wants to admit to. It's just obvious that you're going to continue growing, as well, through your life, and where you land and things like that will be definitely exciting to see. So please keep us up to date for sure. And this show is so funny. And Alan, we do have some time, obviously, to ask another question. But this thing goes so fast, Jessica. We always say, people think, well, you do an hour show, and there's a lot of half hour shows, and we just don't know how we'd be able to do a half hour show with people like yourself. So we've always said, hey, we're going to let it rip. We're going to let it ride. We'll try to keep it within the 60 minutes. And it just happens so quickly. So appreciate all your insight, and kudos to absolutely everything that you've created to date, and the fact that, that lonely child, that creative child, and not many friends, but I'm sure, you're just such a likable person that you had these things going on in your mind very young, and obviously that just came out into the creative world, and you created something pretty amazing. So kudos to all that. I think you're just such a likable person talking to you. So I just wanted to thank you for taking the opportunity to spend some time with us, for sure.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, it's been really fun. And I really enjoyed sharing all this stuff with you guys.
Well, it is. I just turned to our clock on our conferencing page, and we're on we're into minute 52, which I didn't think was the case, but it is. But that being said, I don't really care.
It's our show.
It's our show. We can do what we want. I just want to say, we're giving you lots of accolades, and it's we don't always do that. But I just want you to know, Jessica, like Chris said, you're doing things correctly, at least through our eyes. At our ages of having lots of scars and bumps and bruises, you're doing things correctly. And you know, I wish I knew at your age what I know now, or I wish I just knew at my age what you know yet now at your age, if that makes sense. Life would be completely, completely different. But you really do understand the entrepreneurial hat. Right. And I guess a question I want to ask, and I want to put you on the spot a little bit, and feel free to say, well, whatever you want to say. But, you do give back. And, you know, Chris and I are always, you know, thinking in the back of our minds the new waves of entrepreneurs that are starting now. And, you know, maybe they come from an employee status, or maybe they're young and they come from just, you know, having ideas. But we're going to start working with real young entrepreneurs. I don't know what that looks like yet. Chris and I have started to talk about it, but we don't have necessarily a game plan down. But there's a lot of entrepreneurs out there that are just starting that need guidance. Would you consider coming back on the show or working with us somehow in putting together something for young entrepreneurs, kind of a game plan, maybe an environment for them to participate in that gives them some of these inside accesses they might not normally get? Would you be interested in something like that?
Yeah, I'd be very. Actually, I already spend a good chunk of my charity time, as they call it, on mentoring up-and-coming entrepreneurs who are just getting off the ground. And I do one-on-one mentoring with many of them, too. I don't just speak in groups. I like coaching them one by one, too. So I love to do it, already do it, and looking for more.
Super.
Super.
I don't know what it'll look like, but we can create something, because I think it's a high need for it out there. There's some challenges happening in the marketplace that, kind of fabricating the entrepreneur, you know, taking somebody else's knowledge and wisdom and marketing it as, you know, as the end all, the be all. And I think that's happening to an awful lot of people, and they're not really understanding, because nobody's necessarily really told them that there's a lot that goes into being an entrepreneur, and it's not just aggregating wisdom and experience from others. It's about really getting in there and having the experiences yourself. And so the more that we can, you know, help instill that in the audience, then, the kudos for everybody. We help weed out some of that new emerging challenges and chaff, if you will. Boy, I might get some feedback from that comment, but nonetheless, that's okay. So anyway, where would we like to take Jessica with the last few minutes we have, Chris?
Well, I always like to throw in just a, you know, more of a personal, few questions, and it's always interesting to talk about business, of course, and you shared so much insight to, how you've been able to manage and navigate through your business, world. What do you do for fun, Jessica?
Yeah, I actually love flying airplanes for fun. So I'm a commercial licensed pilot, actually, even though I never plan on taking a commercial airplane pilot airline job in any way. I just thought it'd be fun to get it for the bragging rights.
I love that. You know, because that's not an easy task, guys.
It's many, just because I can. I love that.
It's many, many hours, to be able to do something like that. So, that's incredible. That is really incredible. Skill set, and something that, you know, you should definitely be proud of. Pretty cool. Thank you so much.
You said it so nonchalantly, too.
Right, I know, right?
Oh, people, their whole career is to get their commercial. I just did a commercial license because I thought it'd be cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually just passed it this week. So you guys are the first people I'm ever telling.
That is awesome. Right.
Congratulations.
In fact, I haven't even told my mom yet. So wow. You got to send out before.
Sorry, Mom.
Oh, man, I got to go back call her now.
Well, we'll make sure that this airs after you make the phone call. And
thank you.
Really appreciate, Jessica, you taking some time out again. Kudos to all the things that you're working on. And we're going to be sure to, you know, stay connected with you. And, you know, we have certain things we're working on this year, as mentioned, as well as a live show. And, you know, we always like to bring interesting guests back on. And if you're open, we'd love to have you on, you know, our live show and, you know, talk to some real entrepreneurs calling in and help them solve some of their own challenges through, you know, your venture as an entrepreneur and as a CEO of a company that you've been able to help foster and grow. So if that's an opportunity, we'd love to have you on.
Yeah, that sounds fun. And also, I'm always open to talking to people. So my email is just ceo@indonero.com. And if anyone ever felt like reaching out or sending in some questions, feel free to do so. And I'm always happy to help.
That's awesome. There you go. Thank you for that. There you go, folks. To our audience, I hope you grabbed some great nuggets from Jessica today. She gave you her direct email, and not too often do you get a chance to, you know, connect with someone. So take advantage of that if you have anything that, you know, perhaps Jessica can help you with. Again, Alan, always a pleasure, my friend. I love these shows, and this was a particularly fun one, just, you know, watching something grow from nothing to something, and certainly with the evaluation and what they're doing from a perspective of growth is just, you know, fascinating in a very short period of time. So again, congratulations on that, you know, success so far, Jessica. And Alan, always a pleasure, my friend.
Likewise, Chris. You know, it really is a privilege to be able to, you know, to work this this podcast with you, and I look at where we've come from and where we're headed, and the life piece that we're going to implement and what that's going to mean for some folks. And it's an honor to do that. So again, thank you so much for being such a great co-host and a great partner in these ventures, and lots coming. And Jessica, it's an honor to have you on the show. You are quite the woman and quite the entrepreneur, and those are compliments in both rights.
Thank you so much. I love this. This is so fun.
Well, I'm glad you had a good time. I'm glad you're so transparent. I think that's a trait that a lot of people are afraid to embark on, and it's something that you've embraced from day one. And but before we let you go, I got one last question for you. You always
sure.
want to leave the audience with a, not that you haven't given them lots of things to act upon and to enact in their business, but what one thing would you like to leave with the audience, something they can start on doing today to help improve their life or their business?
I would say go out and do those full surveys. I talked about that for quite a bit here, so you know exactly how I think about it. I'd like all of you guys to go out and survey your team members every single month, and to have them give you very direct feedback on where they think that you're not spending enough time, attention, or and giving enough care to. That is my ask.
I love it. The vulnerability of the entrepreneur. What a great trait.
For sure.
Well, thank you. It's been an honor to have you back on, or have you on, Jessica. Right. And we hope you come back on.
For sure.
Thanks, guys. This is great.
Well, thank you to our audience. Of course, info@thinkboldbebold.com is where you can come and provide some comments. Of course, we're aired on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Podomatic. I think I got everything there, didn't I, Alan?
Yeah, got them all. Right along.
Great. And it wouldn't be a show, folks, without me saying, do something nice for someone today.